My name is Todd Hafer. I'm editor of Bookstore Journal magazine, which I just happened to bring a copy of. This is the official trade publication for the Christian Booksellers Association, of which Bill Anderson is the head. You heard him speak this morning. And this magazine goes primarily to owners, managers, and employees of Christian retail stores throughout the country. Also, most of, if not all, the major supplier companies, Thomas Nelson Books and Murr Records, and all of those people subscribe as well. And quite a few authors and artists also use this magazine to keep up with what's going on in the industry. We review a lot of materials in this publication. We review about 30 books every month and about 10 to 12 records and about 6 to 8 videos. So I get to see a lot of reviews, and we also were in charge of selecting from the vast hordes of books and videos and tapes and records that come in. We have to pick out the ones that are most worthy of review. And I think this is a very valid topic, and I'm excited that you're here and interested in it. I want to talk a little bit about the value of critical writing, and we're going to focus mainly on reviews, but I think just in general I want to encourage you to think critically. And that doesn't mean you go around looking for people to cut down and rip apart. But as Bill said earlier, we're in such a media-glutted society, and there are a lot of dog products around, and not only things that may not be quite up to par in the Christian realm, but the secular media is putting out a lot of stuff that just isn't worth anything, and a lot of times is very damaging. And there need to be people out there who are saying, wait a minute, this isn't quite right. You know, let's be careful how we treat this, or this book doesn't have the right to have any space on Christian bookshelves. So it's very important. Also, with all the newspapers and television shows and movies and videos and everything else that are out there, Bill talked about how many you'd have to read 200 books a day just to keep up with the books. Imagine if you tried to add movies and videos and records and all that into the equation. People need some guidance on how to spend their time and how to spend their money. So I think that criticism is very valid from that point of view. Also, a good review, good critical review, is going to help people get the most out of what they do read. If there's a particular book out and a review says, this book will be really good for people who are hurting, someone who's just lost a relative or a close friend, and chapters 6 and 7 are particularly excellent. If you don't read any other part of the book, read these. When a reader reads that review, then picks up the book, he or she will be able to get more out of the book from having read a good, solid, sound review. Also, something, and this goes along with what Bill said about the dog books, a critical review in Bookstore Journal, and by critical I mean negative review, gets people's attention. Believe me, because they call me, and they let me know, and the authors call me, and they let me know what they thought of that bad review. But that's okay, because frankly, if a book is unbiblical, or if it's just a weak imitation, there are a lot of pretenders to Charles Swindoll's throne out there. We're going to say that, and we're going to send a message to that author, and we're going to send a message to that publisher with that review and say, this is not biblical what you're saying here, and we're going to say it, and we're going to let stores know about it, and if you do it again, we're going to get you again. So it's, and I think by doing that, it's not just that we can make fun of everybody, but we can help elevate the standards of excellence, because people know if they put out something that's not worth the space on a Christian store's shelves, Bookstore Journal is going to say something about it. Stores, the majority of which base a lot of buying decisions on our reviews, which is a tremendous responsibility, but they're going to say, hey, I don't think this book is quite worth stocking, and maybe next time around when it's time for this publisher to line out the 30 or 40 or 50 or 60 books they're going to do in that year, they're going to say, well, you know what? This approach, we kind of got nailed on this, and we've kind of taken a long, hard look at ourselves and said, you know what, this wasn't really biblical, this wasn't really responsible, so this time we're going to try to do better. Again, another value of what a good, solid critic can do. Also, I hope that this workshop will encourage you to investigate this specialized form of writing. Reviews are one of the primary ways that critics can become known, but there are a lot of other ways to incorporate critical writing. People have done pieces maybe criticizing a political campaign, whether it be really good or really bad. Maybe even entire president's term, people have put together some kind of a critical work on that. So critical writing does not necessarily have to be limited to a book review or to a music review. There are a lot of other realms that you can investigate. One of our best reviewers in Bookstore Journal, he reviews videos for us. He also works for MGM and has done several television shows. One of them, he's sad because it just got canceled. But his name is Harry Cheney. He writes a lot for Eternity and Christian Herald. He will analyze a secular movie. He's done reviews of movies like Fatal Attraction and Someone to Watch Over Me and Nuts, the movie with Barbara Streisand. And not just done a Christian review of a secular piece of artwork for a Christian magazine, but he's looked at that movie and then said, this is what this movie says about society, and kind of built it into a broader piece of work. He did an excellent job of taking the movie Fatal Attraction and then taking an overall look at how the world looks at marital infidelity and then what the biblical standpoint is. So the basic critical direction can serve as a springboard for a lot of different kinds of articles. So you have a lot of stuff open to you. I think that pretty much wraps up the overview. So now we can move on to point two. 9 qualities of first-rate reviewers. I was trying to think of 10 so I could have a nice even number, but this really sums it up. If you have these, you'll be well on your way to being a good, solid reviewer. By the way, at any point, if there are any questions, feel free to just stick your hand up and we'll stop and see if we can answer it for you. First of all, they know and love their field. And some of these are going to seem so self-evident that you're going to go, what is this? But it's very, very important. And both of those, both to know it and to love it. One of the things I love to see, we get a lot of inquiries into Bookstore Journal. I want to be a book reviewer. I want to be a music reviewer. And a lot of people will list their qualifications or send in some critical work that they've done. And I like to see that. But something that really makes me glad is when somebody writes and says, you know, I just love to read. I read all the time. I think that doesn't mean that person is, okay, you've got the job. But it's a good start, because if you love your discipline, if you're a movie buff, or if you just read everything you can get your hands on, or you're listening to music all the time, you even have one of those waterproof things in the shower so you can listen to music, I think it's going to make you a better reviewer. And also, it's going to make what you do satisfying. You're going to enjoy it. And that might compensate for the fact that there's not always big money in reviewing. But I think that's really important. Now, if you love the field but you don't really know it that well, there are ways to get around that. There are a lot of research kind of works you can do. There are histories of Christian music, history of Christian video. That'd be a very short book at this point. But there are ways you can supplement that knowledge. But if you're thinking, what would I like to write critically about, I would urge you to go with what you know. You know, even if you're just I don't want to use the word couch potato, but if you love television and you watch it a lot, believe it or not, you thought you were just wasting time during all those many hours of watching Love Boat and all the other wonderful television shows. But what you've probably done is built up a pretty good idea of what's on TV. You know what a situation comedy is. You know what a soap opera is. And it sounds so simple, but it really will help make you a better reviewer when you sit down, because you're going to know what's out there. Second, and this is going to apply to any kind of writing you do, no matter what, is they know their audience. And again, in a pretty simple point, but you would be amazed at the inquiry letters I get for Bookstore Journal, which makes it obvious these people have no idea what audience we're reaching, and they're writing on the subject that a certain audience is not going to care about. You know, it's like writing a book on how to cure bacon for, you know, some Jewish publication. You've got to know what your audience is. Also, Bookstore Journal is a trade magazine, so people that are going to read this are going to have a little bit different focus than people who are reading CCM or a consumer magazine. You've got to know who your audience is, because that's going to determine what you need to know. A consumer leafing through and seeing this review of Amy Grant is probably not going to care that Amy Grant is going to have a $200,000 promotional campaign behind her new record, and that she's going to be, making a worldwide publicity tour, unless the tour happens to be in that consumer's city. And it's not going to care that the company is offering a 40% discount to retailers and free freight and 90 days to pay it back. And consumers can go, I don't really care, about that. I just want to know, is this a good album I should go out and buy? But and also something especially within the Christian market to remember in knowing your audience, there's a lot of different denominations out there, and the way you write a review, or even if they'd be interested in a particular review, sometimes depends on those denominational slants. So be aware, if you're sitting down to write a critical piece, think, okay, who am I writing this for? If you know somebody from that group, all the better. Picture that person in your mind. And that's what I try to do writing for the journal. I try to picture some different retailers I know and think, okay, what is Pearl Graves there in Hales Corner, Wisconsin? What does she need to know about, creating effective music displays or whatever? So think about who your audience is as you write. Also, something that will come into play there, a lot of fields, music especially, but video have their own little catchphrases and cliches and all of that. Is this a really with it kind of group? If you're writing for CCM, you can use all these initials like, this is an R&B flavored album, and it's not M-O-R, and it's heavy metal, new music, and throw out all these terms, and those readers are going to know what you're talking about. But if you're writing for Christianity Today, or some magazine where the average age of the reader is 45, you're not going to want to say, this is a real gonzo magazine, it's happening, it's hip, it's wild. They're going to be intimidated by that. So knowing the audience will also help tailor the language for that group. Yes?
How do you determine that? Where do you start determining what the audience is?
A couple of good ways to do that. Most magazines that I know of do some kind of year-end reader poll. Or if you request it from them, they can probably give you a basic demographic background. But Campus Life, I always look for that, CCM, even Bookstore Journal. We do readership surveys, and they usually will publish that around the first of the year. And take a quick look through that and see, okay, what's the average age of the reader here? Are most of these readers male or female? Do most of them own a VCR? Do most of them watch 8 hours of television a day? Have they bought a record in the last month? What kind of music did they like? Did they all like heavy metal? Did they all like Sandy Patty? Those are some good ways. A lot of times, if you're working with a publication, I'm very open to people saying to me, describe your readers to us. Tell me what they're all about. And I'd be happy. I'd rather do that up front than have them send in something that's just not quite right and make them redo their whole approach. So those are a couple good ways. And hang out with them, is one way if you can. Something that's really helped me tailor my articles in Bookstore Journal is going to conventions, or we have a lot of retailers come into our headquarters for various training, or sometimes just to say hi and eat a few donuts and stuff. So just hanging out with them and hearing them talk, and that's given me, I have a lot better perspective now of what the average Christian retailer, there's not an average Christian retailer, by the way, they're a unique special group, but I have a good idea where they're coming from, and I know a lot better now, hey, this might offend them, or if I say this, they're not going to know what this means. So those are some good ways. But I am not aware of a major magazine that doesn't do at least semi-regularly some kind of a readership poll. Read the letters to the editor is another good way to do it. Hear what people gripe about. If they get 50 negative letters about something, chances are that's representative of a large portion of the readership. Every now and then you're going to get a stray here and there saying, some weird criticisms. But that's one good way to focus in. Okay, number three. They have a firm understanding of a work before they begin to critique it. I don't recommend reading a chapter of a book, writing the first part of a review, reading the second chapter, going back. I really would urge you, whether it's a TV show or whatever, don't try to write part of the review during the commercial because you hate the commercial anyway. Finish the book, or finish listening to the album. Read over the lyric sheets if it's an album. Think about what this project is. Look at it as a whole piece of work. And think back. Say to me, What statement overall is this person trying to make? Is this TV show trying to make? What's my overall reaction to this movie? And then you're ready to launch in. But I recommend just digesting it a little bit and letting all the pieces kind of fall together, and then you can go for it. Number four is a really important one, especially for a viewer. Paint vivid yet brief pictures of their subjects, of your movie, of your video, TV show, or whatever. Consumers especially, they don't want you to tell them the whole story of a book, especially if you give away the ending. They're going to be really hot at you for doing that. And it takes time to read. A retailer especially, he wants to go through and look at these book reviews and decide what he should stock, what he shouldn't stock. Maybe should he really promote this one? And okay, we'll stock this, but we're not going to brag about it. We're going to leave it on the back shelf back there someplace. So he's going to want to be able to get... They want to get an idea what the story is in a nutshell, that such and such a book is about this guy who does this and this happens to him and whatever. It's okay to give a brief summary, but you don't have to go in detail. And then in chapter 6, Mary's cousin comes to visit and causes all kinds of problems and the kids get a rash and on and on and on. You don't need to go into that deep of detail. But basically what you want to do with this description of what the work is, if you're in a movie theater and you're watching a movie, put that reader in the seat right next to you and help him see what you saw when you watched it. And I have a couple examples, I think, of some vivid language in a review. Let's see. This is a publication called Harvest Rock Syndicate, which is sort of like the Christian music industry's answer to Rolling Stone. But there's a guy named Mark Eicher who writes for them. He also writes for us, because I saw some of his reviews in here. And I said, I want to get this guy. And by golly, he did it. But I just want to give a couple quick examples of, I think, something that's really vivid. This is a review of an album, in case you're interested, called Darn Floor Big Bite by a group called Da. There's some strange things out there. Very good album, by the way. Okay. Greg Flesh is a member of this group. Says, Greg Flesh continues to amaze as Da's resident mad scientist of guitar and attendant technology. His innovative angular guitar effects complement Terry Taylor's provocative lyrics. Tim Chandler's dissonant bass lines crawl like big lizards through the underbrush of Doug Doyle's mixes. You know, those kind of things, that tells you something, okay? You can start to picture that. In a review he did for us, he's talking about Mylon Lefevre, who's kind of a southern rock and roller. He says, Mylon Lefevre's music is as down-home as chicken fried steak. That's vivid language. That tells you a little bit about what's coming up. Another quick review, this is from another guy in this publication, a review of an album called D&K by DeGarmo and Keel. Quick background, this is a group that was real hard rock and roll group, you know, guitars and drums banging away, and then they kind of went a little more mellow. Okay, we're not talking Muzak, but somewhere in between Muzak and heavy metal, to get maybe a little more commercial accessibility, and their fans didn't like that too much. So now they're going back to their roots. So this is what he says. D&K is another vital sign that these Memphis boys never really forgot how to boogie, even when they were churning out more creamy confections than Dairy Queen. Talking about their, you know, fluffy, frothy music. And that's vivid language that tells you something. And I really like that style. So those are ways that you can create an image and kind of explain what this is without exhaustively detailing everything about the movie, everything about the book, whatever. Those are just some good examples. Mark's a good guy. If you are into reading reviews and seeing, you know, what is a good reviewer, he's a good person to read. Number five, very, very important. If I had to, boy, I don't know, it'd be really tough to pick a most important quality. This would be right up there. This would be in the top three, probably. Give specific criticism and praise. I can't emphasize this enough. Don't just say this is a great album. Don't just say this book stinks. That doesn't really tell me anything other than that you didn't like it very much. Why does it stink? Why is it such a great album? I think about discouraging people from even using those superlatives. But I think it's okay to do it if you support it. And make sure that whatever comments you make, you can back it up. And if you and say this is a great album because the production is excellent. The drums aren't mixed so high that you can't hear the vocals, whatever. This is a good book. Why? Because it's biblical. Because it answers real life issues because the author has a vivid writing style and uses a lot of personal experiences that most people can relate to. Those kinds of things are what people want to see in a review because that helps them judge. Obviously, a review is very subjective, and that kind of approach helps them judge, is this really as good as he's saying it is, or is it really as bad as he's saying it is? In other words, if you say, this album's lyrics are insipid, you don't have to print a couple of songs in your review, but take a few lines out, you know, God is like a tree and he loves me and that makes me laugh, hee hee, whatever. You know, put that in there and say, see what I mean? These lyrics are insipid. Or if it's great, if there's a great line from a book and this author has a very poetic and potent style, take a few lines, you know, take a few lines from an A.W. Tozer book or whoever, or take a few lines from Charles Colson's Kingdoms in Conflict and say, see what I mean? Okay? See this guy? And then the guy who's reading the review or the girl can say, yeah, this is good. He's right. I can see if the rest of the book's like this, I agree. This is a great book. So I think enough said on that, but I really can't say enough about that. Be specific and support those points. Everything you say, ask yourself, why? Why is this true? And then show people why it's true. Number six. Boy, I love if you ever review for Bookstore Journal, if you follow this one, I will just love you. Get the details right. If you lambast a book and get the main character's name wrong all the way through, your review loses a lot of credibility. This happened to us once. Unfortunately, it's happened more than once. Not often, and those reviewers are not writing for us anymore because it completely strips all the credibility and believability away from your review. We had a lady who wrote a very negative review of a Christian novel. She had the setting wrong. The book took place in Canada. She had it taking place in Colorado. One of the characters broke her leg, but in her version, the wrong character broke her leg. Things like that. Now, as it turned out, she just got a little confused, and she really did read the book, but she just got a little mixed up. But when the publisher called in and said, this is a negative review, and you know what? I don't think your person even read this book, because look, you know, Joan didn't break her leg. It was Marianne that broke her leg. And this thing didn't take place in Colorado. It took place in Canada. And all I can say to that is, gulp, you know? I don't have a leg to stand on. So make sure you get the details right. If you're quoting material, go back up to number five, open the book and make sure that you quote it word for word and get it perfect. Don't go, I think R.C. Sproul said this, you know, make sure it's right. Or I think the lyric went something like, and try to sing it to yourself, God is like a bee. No, it's a tree, something like that. Make sure that it's right because that's really, really crucial because if a negative review comes out, the people who produced it are going to be a little bit defensive, and they're going to be looking for a way to nail you and say, aha, you don't know anything about literature, so our book is great after all. So make sure that you get that stuff right. Quotes, settings, names, I think I've pretty much covered it. Anything in detail. An album producer, make sure you get the producer's name right. Make sure you spell it right. I saw a review in another publication. Thank goodness this wasn't us. There are two great producers, and their names are John and Dino Elefante. Well, it's E-L-E-F-A-N-T-E. Well, this particular guy was just thinking Elefant Elefante, so he spelled it E-L-E-P-H-A-N-T-E. So, another one I saw was a book review but written by Rosie Greer, who's a big guy. I mean, you would not, mistake him for Whitney Houston, okay? And this particular person spelled his name R-O-S-I-E instead of R-O-S-E-Y. I would not want to be that person if Rosie found out about that. But those kind of things are really crucial to your believability and credibility. Number seven, and this is important as well. I guess they're all important or I wouldn't have put them here. They are honest, fair, and confident. Now, I was trying to think of a word, courageous, but confident is important being a reviewer. But all of these things, you can't take one and focus on it to the exclusion of the others. You've got to be all these things because I think especially if Christians critiquing Christians, we're supposed to speak the truth, but we're supposed to speak the truth in love. So that's something to keep in mind. So be able to give an objective as much as possible, an objective evaluation of a book, and be honest about it. If it's really not very well done, you need to say that. Don't just say, well, it's a brother in Christ, a sister in Christ, so I'll say it's okay, especially for bookstore journal. If a bookseller is looking through here and he wants to make sure that only the best stuff is on his shelves, then I've got to have reviewers who are willing to say, quite honestly, this really isn't worth the space on your shelf. There are 10 books on this subject that are better. Or there are probably a million books that are on this same subject that are a lot better. Got to be able to do that. Being fair to the people. Maybe it's this artist's first album. So you can say, this is a first album, therefore, you know, there's some problems with it. You know, but recognize that fact. And tell us, this guy will never go anywhere. He's terrible. He's awful. The production is so bad. You know, I hope this guy didn't quit his day job, you know, just to record albums. So that element of kindness needs to be in there, but the truth has to be tied to it inextricably. And don't try to pull them apart. Something that's important in a reviewer for me, you got to be courageous enough to criticize the biggies. If Charles Swindoll writes a bad book, you got to, I mean, that's probably not too likely to happen, but you got to be willing to say it. If Sandy Patty's next album is just not very hot, you got to be willing to say it. On the same hand, if you're not a heavy metal fan and you review the latest Blood Good album and it's really good heavy metal and you hate heavy metal, you still got to say, this is good heavy metal. One of the biggest problems I had with the reviewer, his review started out this way. This is an album by Stryper. He said, I knew I was going to hate this album even before I put it on my turntable. That was the first line in his review. Now that sends up a few flags in my mind here. You know, that just shows that this guy and his personal biases came out throughout the review. And he kind of gave himself away. But what I did is I went and listened to the album in this case and had a few other people listen to it. And I'm not the world's biggest heavy metal fan, but it was good heavy metal music. But this guy just cut it apart. I'd never seen such a negative review, but he had it from the start that this was going to be bad. And sure enough, it turned out to be bad. So you've got to be honest enough to say, this is a good job, even though I don't like it. And maybe you're not the biggest Prairie Romance fan, but maybe Jeanette Oakey's book is pretty good Prairie Romance stuff. You've got to be willing to say that, even if it's not your personal preference. I think it's impossible to be completely unbiased, but you got to work toward that, whichever direction it is. If you love somebody, don't just give them a good review because you love them. If you hate somebody, same thing goes. Number 8 is they present a clear overall judgment of a work's significance and value. We get a lot of what I call mixed reviews. And this is more crucial, I think, for if you're writing for a trade publication where people are going to be basing buying decisions and promotion decisions on something. They need to know, overall, what do you think? Is this book worth it? Does this record belong on my shelves? Will this video be good for in my kids' department or not? I think, and I like it in consumer reviews too. What's your overall reaction? Because you might go through a review and say, these songs are great. Great lyrics and stuff. This guy's got an average voice. There are 12 guys in my church I can think of right now who can sing just as well. And then you can go through and say, the production is good on side one. On side two, you know, it sounds like they made it in their garage. That kind of thing. And so you're going positive, negative, positive, negative. You get to the end and say, so that's all, bye. And the reader's going, well, I don't know. So what about this? Is it good or not good? I know there's some good stuff and some bad stuff, and I can sort of try to judge for myself, but try to give an overall statement, you know, of its significance and its value, especially if you're writing for the trade, because they need to know. And consumers, too. It's a lot lesser degree. A consumer's not going to go out and buy 150,000 copies or whatever of anything, unless it's kind of strange. But they want to know, too. So overall, what do I do? Should I go out and buy this? Should I wait for the guy's next album when he learns how to produce a little bit better or gets a different producer? Maybe one of the Elefante brothers will come in and do it for me. So try to wrap it up and give people something to go on. Don't say it remains to be seen. everything remains to be seen. What I'm going to do in the next 10 minutes remains to be seen. That really doesn't tell anybody anything. A lot of news podcasts end that way, you know. Well, it just remains to be seen. Thank you very much for taking up 15 minutes of my time to tell me that. You know, give them something to go on. Okay, number 9. This is a good one too. They are reliable and they get the reviews in on time. You would make me so happy if every one of my reviewers got reviews in on time. It's very frustrating when you're ready to send a form of a magazine out the door and somebody's saying, I'll get that review to you tomorrow, I promise, I know it was due 6 weeks ago, but my vacuum cleaner broke and everything, all kinds of problems, you know, and one of my kids has got acne really bad and it's messed him up, and, you know, we're all busy folks, but try to get stuff in on time. If you say you can review 3 books this month, please send all 3 reviews back in and not just, well, yeah, I just did 1. I know you sent me 3, but this is like a third, and that's pretty good. You know, those kind of things. Unless you're really, really good, you probably won't survive with a publication as a regular reviewer. I have some who will survive because they're so good, and maybe they know that, and I'll wait for them. But it really makes things a lot easier if you get stuff in on time. Or if you can't be on time, let somebody know ahead of time rather than 2 weeks after the fact. So those are some just basic overall qualities of what I think makes a first-rate reviewer. I wanted to also discuss under point number 3 some of the mechanics, because this gives you some general qualities, but what's about the nitty-gritty stuff? What do I really need to do when I'm sitting down to write a critical piece of work? First of all, do your homework. Any necessary preparation. There's some promotional materials along with it. Read it. If you're going to review Amy Grant's album, go back and listen to the last, you know, maybe a little bit of this last album or the one before that. Go back and listen to Age to Age, My Father's Eyes, and you can kind of compare how far she's progressed. You know, obviously, there has to be somewhat of a limit on this. You can't go back and read every other book that Jeanette Oak has ever done, or you'll be 95 before you get finished. Then you'll really be late. You'll never be able to get your review on time. But try to get some kind of a perspective. Something I also really suggest, read the publisher's hype on the book. And I'll tell you why. Some people might think, no, don't do that because it'll sway you. But I know that good, solid, critical people aren't going to let a bunch of hype get to them. But what does this book promise to do? What does the author promise to do in his little foreword? Are all the little testimonials on the back cover? This is the best book on mingling politics and religion in the history of mankind. And then what you're going to do is say, does it live up to the hype? Does this book accomplish what people say? Is this really the best bluegrass album ever put down on vinyl? It gives you something to go on with your review. You can take all that stuff and say, okay, this is what you're saying about it. Now I'm going to really, really read this book. I'm going to listen to this album a lot, and I'm going to see if you live up to your words here. I'm going to, you know, call them on the carpet for it. Say, okay, Thomas Nelson, this is what you said about this book. Let's see. Let's see if you can, you know, put your words where your mouth is or something like that. Second thing, eliminate distractions. This is not forever and ever, because that's pretty hard to do. But at least while you're watching the TV show, watching the video, listening to the album, listen, you know, have a record on while you're fixing dinner, while you're working on the car, and your kids are running in screaming, you know, playing handball in the living room, all of that. Probably not going to be able to give it your undivided attention. Don't try to read the book while you're sitting down in front of the TV watching Alf and doing your taxes. Try to give it your full attention so you can really concentrate on what's going on. Third thing, and there are some reviewers who don't do this, and most of them are really seasoned, but I would encourage everybody to do it. Take notes as you read or listen or watch or whatever you're doing to digest this information. Don't try to go from memory and say, okay, that third song on the album was really good. It had a really good lyric, something like this or that, and there was a really good drum part. Take notes as you go. It's really easy in a book. You can just mark the book up like crazy. Highlight stuff that's really good. Highlight something that's really profound. Highlight something that's really stupid. Here's a misspelled word. I'm going to mark this. You know, editor people, you know, love to jump on things like that. But sort of keep a little diary of what's going on, because then you can go back and say, oh, that's right, I remember this. First 10 minutes of this video, the sound was a problem, or something like that. Or this video was really lame until Pee Wee Herman made his first appearance, whatever it takes. But I really encourage you to do that. I have some reviewers who say, I'm so well-schooled in music now that I don't need to take notes. It's all just right up here. Well, I'd feel a little more comfortable with right down there, too. Number four, and this is tough with busy people, but it's important. Spend as much time as possible with the project. I know I can tell when a book reviewer sends a book in. I can usually tell, I should say, and this reviewer hasn't read the entire book. They're just things that show up, like they've just copied the back jacket copy, stuff like that. Say, I don't quite think so, or I'm most intimately involved with the music, and I try to listen to every album that comes through that I send out. It's impossible to listen to them all. So I know, if they're just trying to fake their way through it. So spend time with it. A couple of my music reviewers, for example, spend a minimum of 48 hours listening to every project for 2 days. I mean, I don't think they listen to it day and night, but they just immerse themselves in it. They take it in the car with them. They listen to it at home. They have it in the office. If you're reading a book, read it carefully and maybe go back and reread a chapter that's really good, or reread some of the parts that are highlighted. If you got a video, rewind that baby and take a look at it again. If you have the time, I realize that's a problem sometimes, but make every effort to really get to know this project, because there's some things, and all of you, I think, have probably had this experience. You go to a movie, you go back and see it a second time, all this stuff just jumps off the screen at you. It's like, was that there before? I didn't even realize that. Stuff will hit you the second time through. And it's good to be able to give a work a chance to grow on you a little bit, or really revolt you. That could be the case. Number five, write while the work is still fresh in your mind. I really think this is important, especially with the notes, because if you listen to something, if I give a reviewer a month to do a particular project, she gets it on the first of the month, and she listens to it on the first of the month. The 29th, she goes, oh, this has got to be in the first of next month. What did that album sound like? I can't remember. I've listened to 12 since then, but I think it was something like this. It's better to do it while it's still right there. Kind of still, the chords are still echoing in your eardrums. Or you can still see those words emblazoned across the page. I think that you'll be a lot better off if you do it that way than trying to go back 2 weeks and remember what you said, even if you take notes. Because sometimes you've written yourself a note and you go back and go, I didn't write this. Somebody copied my writing. It wasn't me, I know. So it's important to do it while it's still kind of in the frontal lobes as opposed to the bacal lobes. I'll try not to use too much technical jargon, but sometimes it just gets away from me. Number four. I was reluctant about including number four in here because I don't want people to be locked into formulas. I think it can be kind of stifling to creativity. But, and if you've never written a review or something critical before, the first time you sit down and do it, it's kind of tough because it's a very specialized form of writing. You're going, oh, wait a minute, this is a little bit different than writing a short story. This is a little bit different than writing a personality profile. I think the first review I ever did was on the meatloaf at the school lunch program. Got a very bad review, by the way. The taste was really bad, and just the whole concept of meatloaf didn't, meat and loaf don't go together. I don't mind having a loaf of bread, but a loaf of meat just doesn't, it's sort of like banana soup or asparagus pudding. They're just things that don't go well together. Anyway, that was my first official critique that I did. But the first time you sit down, even if you have a good topic like meatloaf, it might be a little bit tough. So that's why I've included this formula. But use it as a tool and as a general guideline. But don't go, okay, time to write my review. Here's the interpretation. Here's technical analysis. Here's three judgment. First of all, these areas kind of overlap, as you'll notice. But I think these are something that you can follow, and if your review includes these things specifically, you'll have a pretty complete overview of the work. First of all, interpretation. Basically what that is you're defining the work, and this can be really simple. Interpretation sounds kind of like a fancy word. Well, how do I interpret that? It's like interpreting tongues or something. Just basically, what is it? this is a pop album by a group, you know, who used to be guys at a car wash or whatever. Just kind of give a, you know, what is it? And if there's a stated purpose or a perceived purpose, this is what the author is setting out to do in this book. Kind of a little bit of an introduction. The second part of it, and again, I want to emphasize, these things do not have to go 1, 2, 3. It might go 3, 2, 1, or they may all just be jumbled up together, but just to contain these elements is the key. The technical analysis. How is the author doing this? Is he using allegory? Is he using haiku? You know, stream of consciousness, whatever. Is this an acoustic guitar album? There's not a lot of fancy-smancy DX7 synthesizers and electric guitar, just a little acoustic guitar and, you know, Gary Chapman singing background vocals or whatever, that kind of stuff. This is an animated presentation. And then you can also build into this technical analysis some value judgments. Is this animation good in this Superbook video? Or does it look like something that I watched when I was a little kid? Bleep, 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 how many years ago that was, you know. Is this album well produced? Does it sound good? Or does it sound like there's a vacuum cleaner running in the background? What about this book? Is the type too small to read? Is it too big? Are the lines so close together and they start at the very tip top of the page and they bleed right off the bottom, so when you get done you feel like you just need to take a shower and kind of towel off a little bit because it's taken so much effort to read that page? Just some basic things like that. Are the illustrations helpful, or do they look like they were drawn by one of those experimental monkeys? That kind of thing. All is incorporated into the technical analysis, basically the production mechanical stuff. How well, you know, what kind of medium is used to communicate this message, and is it an attractive medium and an effective medium? And the third part is the judgment. That sounds so severe, but this kind of follows back to the 9 qualities. Some kind of overall perception of the work. Did this approach work, or did it not work? Overall, is this a significant work? Is it valuable? How significant is it? How valuable? Those kind of things can be included. In your little handy-dandy handout here, example number... I knew when I stapled these things in last night that I wasn't going to go in order, so I might as well not have even numbered them, but I tried to. Example 2A.
Tom, do you have any more of those?
Oh, sure do.
I probably do, but let me see. There might be some.
We have a veritable plethora.
Okay. Oh, yes, now everybody. Okay. Everybody set?
Okay. The review of the Russ Taff album by Russ Taff. It doesn't sound like a very. If you just read through that real quickly, this is a review that really incorporates those. Three elements of the formula: interpretation, technical analysis, and judgment. Not necessarily in that order, but as you just read through it, it's all there. And I'll just give you a few minutes. And this, I wanted you to see some actual review stuff, and you're going to have your chance to do a little bit of your own here in a little bit as well. But just kind of read through that real quick. For the people who are listening to this on tape later, there are people reading in the room now. It's really exciting. I wish you could be here. I think they got ripped off or something. No fair reading any of the others. You can do that later. This is the best one on the page, though. Any comments on this one? It's not, I didn't put this in here because it's the best review ever written, but it does contain those elements. It does a pretty good job of covering it all. He talks about it being a more personal look at the artist, kind of interpretive a little bit. This is what it is. Talks a little bit what the songs deal with, whether being realistic. They are realistic depictions of pain, of living in a fallen world, tempered by the hope of Christ, even in the midst of suffering. Gets a little bit into the musical styles in the second column. It's more of a rock-oriented album, but it's got some other elements incorporated. Mentions a song specifically, a good characteristic of that particular song. And there's a paragraph in there, "This honest, compassionate, eclectic project should find broad appeal." Okay, pretty good overall synopsis. Okay, the store owner who's reading this says, okay, this is an honest, eclectic, compassionate project that should find broad appeal. Great. Oh, it has some surefire radio hits and it sounds great. That's okay. Now, he says it sounds great, but I think he's given you enough background information so it's not just a naked statement hanging out there to dry, so to speak. Something also you may be aware of, for retailers, radio airplay is really key. It's the best form of free advertising. So the fact that he mentioned that is really helpful to a store owner going, hey, that's great. If this song's going to be playing on the radio, people are going to want to run into my store and say, I've got to have the album that has this song on it. So good point that he brought out there. But anyway, that's an example of a review that incorporates those elements. Any questions or comments or anything up to this point? We're doing pretty good on time. But use that formula if you need to, and it'll give you some direction, but don't get yourself locked into it. I wanted to touch a little bit on humor, and we can discuss this maybe in a little bit more detail later, but I wanted to let you get to the practical stuff. I think we need more humor in Christian writing. We're kind of devoid of that. It's difficult to write in Christendom because there's such a potential to offend somebody with almost anything that you try to set out and present them. And it may not offend people quite so much. And it has a way of making a point without sermonizing. And I think it's valid overall. And it can be good in critical writing too. Some of the comments about the creamy confections from Dairy Queen, that's, you know, it's kind of a cutesy little statement. It's better than saying DeGarmo and Keith sold out and they were just putting out a bunch of junk for a long time. It puts in a little bit different light. So I'd encourage people to try to incorporate that in. I'm going to read a part of a review from the Los Angeles Times. And this is a guy who just started writing for places like Bookstore Journal and stuff. And now he's made the big time. And this is a guy named Chris Willman who actually still does some writing for us. But Sandy Patty, most of you are probably familiar with. I can sound just like her in the shower, but I won't give you any examples of that. A guy has written an unauthorized biography of her. She was not real happy, and not that this guy spills all this dirt, you know, Sandy Patty's on Dexatrim or whatever. She just decided not to she did not want to cooperate by being personally interviewed by this guy. She'd rather wait till somebody else, maybe she trusts a little bit better, comes along to write a biography. So it's unauthorized. And Chris Willman is making the point that this guy is going through and reading all these thoughts in Sandy Patty's head without having ever talked to her. And the last comment here, this guy did do a lot of research, but this is his last comment. He said, considering that this otherwise exhaustively researched tome was done without the cooperation of Patty or her family-run organization, Kuzik, that's the author, comes up with some good scoops. In the first two pages, no less, he enters the singer's thoughts as she is awakened by her baby one night at exactly 1:22 a.m., exactly, and he's never... He then quotes the Almighty God entering those thoughts. This is God speaking to Sandy Patty. You are my child. Go and sing. It is my will. Then this is Chris Willman again. Quoting God talking to Sandy Patty without having interviewed either one of them? Introduce this man to Bob Woodward. You know, so it's kind of a humorous way of saying, give me a break here, you know, of making a point. It makes a point without saying, this Kuzik guy, who does he think he is? What kind of a jerk? Quoting God and Sandy Patty too. And some people hold those on, you know, almost the same planes. So that's just a brief example, and I might get into humor a little bit later, but I want to have you do some of the practical application exercises, and that sounds almost painful, but I think they'll be fun. Real quickly, as you look through those the pages that are attached onto the outline, example one, there's a review of a book called Unworld People by Joyce Landorf Heatherly. I don't want you to read that now, but I think this is a good example under the honest and fairness part of how somebody was honest and fair with a very difficult book and a very difficult subject. So that's just kind of for your own reading. And this guy is a pretty good reviewer. His mechanics are okay. He's not the best, the sharpest writer, but he did a really good job of playing fair and at the same time being honest with a real touchy subject, dealing with a real, you know, I don't want to, biggie, heavyweight, all those things have negative connotations. A real well-known person in the industry. So that's something that I'd like you to read later. Yes?
Do you know, did his review affect how her book was promoted?
Yes, it did.
Did it carry some weight?
It carried a lot of weight. Don't want this to have big publicity because I don't want people coming to Bookstore Journal saying, restraint of trade, restraint of trade. But there are stores who it changed their promotion and stocking policies of the book. So your critical reviews have an impact, and that's something you need to keep in mind. I have a responsibility here, but don't let that scare you. But at the same time, don't let it make you be too cocky either. I think you need to be humble and, yeah.
I want to go back to some reality. When these bookstore owners purchased something in volume, say 1,000 copies, 3,000, what do they do with the thing?
They return it. Yes, most of the time there's a returns policy. Sometimes they have to wait 90 days before they can do it, but they'll send it back. Something we try to do with the journal is get the reviews out before, you know, or about the same time the book is coming out, so they can make the decision up front and not have to worry about it. But they send them back. Sometimes they'll send them back if they see something offensive in them. Sometimes it's just a matter that they've been on the shelves for 6 months and they bought 100 and there's still 100 there. Sometimes there's 102, 101. It's like people are bringing their extra ones back so they won't be lonely. so they'll send it. I'm making that up. But so that they're not stuck with them forever and ever. Yeah.
I was late. If you covered this, I'll talk to you later. Did you talk about how you determine what books you review?
At the journal? No, I didn't. And it's a complicated process, but there are several things involved. First of all, we want to be able to review books that the book hasn't already been out for 6 months, and the store already knows if it's selling or not selling. So we review galley proofs a good percentage of the time, you know, before the book is actually published. We look at the author. We probably would not review another Charles Swindoll book because unless all of a sudden something was heretical in there, or he took a brand new approach and he's writing cartoons now or something like that. But our readers know who he is. They know his books are going to sell better than hotcakes, not just like hotcakes. The subject, we try to get a broad range of subject categories included. We want to cover the, you know, missions and fiction and kids' books and books on divorce and books on alcoholism, books on personal holiness and integrity, that kind of thing. We also want to try to represent as many publishers as we can. You know, we don't want to review 25 word books and then, you know, divide it up between the rest of you, hundreds of publishers, maybe get a book in here. We try to give as much representation as possible, but we review books pretty much in proportion of how many a publisher publishes. We try to take a certain percentage. In other words, if Word publishes 100 books and Beacon Hill Press of Kansas City publishes 2, a lot more Word books are going to be reviewed, obviously, because there's more available. We try to, you know, keep up with a solid percentage and get a representative sampling of each publisher's work, because some publishers put out a lot of books during the year, and we want to try to be fair. You know, we don't want to just review one of their books. You know, they're going to do 100 books this year. We review one. It got a bad review, so we're not touching you again. We want to try to get enough of in there to give people an overview. This is what this publisher is doing.
How does a self-publisher get reviewed?
It's not easy. In bookstore journal, it would be tough. You would probably have a better chance of going to a consumer thing, because in bookstore journal, we need to do reviews on books that are, you know, 7,000 store, actually about 16,000 readers actually, who are store owners, have easy access to. You know, and can order easily. They can call up their distributor or call up the publisher and get, you know, however many copies they need, and all the promotional displays and stand-ups and all that kind of stuff. So we've done some small publishing company reviews, but we've made sure that those books were able to be distributed through widespread means. So it's really important, because our stores, it's a great review. They're going to say, how do we get it? Well, somebody's printing it in his basement, and there's only 30 of them available, but, you know, he'll probably be really glad to give them all to you. And now, you know, so we need to try to be sensitive to our audience there, too.
If someone trusted your judgment enough and you would review it, if they would have the resources to print 20,000, would you review it and not print the review until they got 20,000 done?
That's a possibility. It's a possibility. And there was, yes.
Well, I just skimmed through the review of the Joyce Lambert Peverly. It seemed very effective that you did this, but would you encourage this kind of thing? He moves right from the third person objective to a first person personal comment. Mm-hmm. And it seems to work since he's a pastor, but under other circumstances, would you recommend your
That's pastor? That's a really good perception. The fact that he's a pastor, I think, makes that work. And
for the typical reviewer, you wouldn't recommend
probably it. not so much. Some people do, but the shift, I think, is the key. Some people, and also, if you're writing a review, normally they know it's you speaking. You don't normally need to see it, in my opinion, or I think, to say, this is this, and they're going to see your initials or your name at the end, they're going to know, this is who thinks this. But I think it was effective in his case, because he's a minister, and he's saying, I am not damning this person for anything that she may have done or may not have done. You know, this is what as a Christian, this would be my response as a Christian leader and pastor, but this is my reaction to the book. So that's a good perception.
Plus, that's a major part of the book, too.
Yeah.
It's her criticizing the religious community,
mm-hmm.
the pastors. But what I was asking, and I think it does it very effectively,
mm-hmm.
it's a nice dimension. Before a typical person is reviewing, it's better to stay in the third person objective. Unless you're like a Vicki Kuyper, who's reviewing about parenting or, you know, raising kids or whatever, and then it might be very natural for her as a mother. This is how this works. So one way or the other isn't necessarily preferable, just whatever works.
Really, and people generally are writing from somewhat of a first-person view anyway, even though they're saying the author, this excellent book, you know it's them speaking. But his technique worked in his particular situation, but it's a really good example. We do children's books, and a lot of people say, I read this book to my kids and they loved it, or I played this Bullfrogs and Butterflies album for, you know, my kid and his friends, and they all loved it. And that's kind of nice, because it's, you know, it's better than this reviewer played this for his children and they loved it. You know. Yeah.
Is a reviewer in danger of a lawsuit? For instance, in a situation like this, if the publisher decided that it ruined
They would, first of all, they'd probably come after us. But a review, by its very nature, is a critical piece. It's a critical evaluation of a work. Unless there was something slanderous or untrue or something like that, you're on solid ground. And that's something that we look at as a magazine, too. There are things that can be said in a book review that we would be on, at least our lawyer assures us, we'd be on thin ice saying in any other part of the magazine. But a review is a review, and it's going to look at the positive and negative. And I also want to make a point. A reviewer has just as much responsibility to praise a book to the rafters if it's worthy of it. I think it's needed, and it's certainly allowable, and it's also biblical, because it can, just as much as we can send messages to publishers and authors that this book isn't biblical and it doesn't line up, we can send the same kind of message in a positive vein. This is a great book. Give us more like this. So I want to make sure, the word critic has a negative connotation now, but it really shouldn't, because a critic should be just as eager to praise something that's great as to say that something as bad is bad. Yeah.
That just had a little question about the lengths. Is there any maximum or minimum number of words on review? Or
we generally set a guideline, but again, with the Landorf review, it was necessary to write longer. We have a pre-prepared is redundant, a prepared form that we send out, and we ask people to stay within that. If it goes a little bit longer, we don't mind. We like to try to keep them to a readable length, especially for our readers who are very, very busy. But sometimes the nature of you is going to warrant a little more space, and I would much rather have somebody deal with the thing in full than wrap it up and kind of leave people hanging or not discuss a really important part of the book. Okay. We got some time to do some of these practical deals. The first thing I'd like you to do is review a review. That, and it's example 2. It's a review of the book, The Age of Thunder by Friedrich Prokosch. And this is a review. I just want you to read through this real quickly, and then we're going to critique this critique, see if we think it's good or not.